2012 promises to be a pivotal year in Maine politics. I'm Keith Shortall, and today we'll sort through the battles that lie ahead, including several $100 million in cuts to human services that Governor Paul LePage is asking lawmakers to approve in short order.
They need to give us an answer by the end of January in order to get it implemented by April 1st.
But skeptics, including key Democrats at the State House, say they're not sold on the administration's numbers.
We have to figure out a process whereby we can work through all of these proposals and talk about alternatives.
Oh, and did we mention that it's an election year? Maine politics in 2012. When we come back, A.J. Higgins and Mal Leary at the State House, USM political science professor Ron Schmidt with me in our Portland studios, and we'll talk with Governor Paul LePage. This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of the following program is made possible by MPBN listener contributions and by Garand Marketing and Communications, serving clients here and abroad from offices in Portland, Maine, the happiest people in business, Garand.com.
I'm Keith Shortall, and as you just heard, this is Maine Calling, MPBN's new interactive program. We thank those of you who submitted more than 100 suggestions for the name, and we look forward to you your continued involvement in this program. Today, a look ahead at some of the big stories looming on Maine's political horizon: the budget battle, labor issues, and it's an election year, as Maine voters will choose a U.S. senator, two representatives, and will determine the balance of power in the next legislature. To help us sort this out in our Portland studios is Ron Schmidt, a professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine. At the State House in Augusta, Mal Leary of the Capitol News Service, and MPBN's own State House Bureau Chief, A.J. Higgins. Welcome to you all. We have a lot to get to, but first, he's only been in office 1 year, but Governor Paul LePage has already taken steps that indicate he's running for re-election in 2014, though he's not saying much about that. He did, however, talk about his agenda for the coming session earlier today with A.J. Higgins.
Good morning, Governor. I'm A.J. Higgins, the State House Bureau Chief for MPBN. This is our first formal interview since you're taking office a year ago. It's been a busy year. You don't have much time today. We've all had busy days here today, so I guess we might as well get right into it. You haven't had the chance to formally address the legislature yet. They just came back yesterday. You will be doing it later on this month. I know that your message is probably still being formulated at that time. There's some things that you want to hit upon, but obviously, we're at a pretty critical point with the DHHS as we begin this session. What kind of a message would you like to give sitting lawmakers if you had the chance to do that right at this moment?
If I had to do it over, AJ, I would have vetoed the budget last year because they keep saying, well, you signed it. But if you recall, at the time of signing the budget, I was quite animated about not doing what was needed to be done. We knew back then if they didn't fix DHHS that we'd be back. I wish I would have now vetoed it. They could have passed it, you know, overridden the veto, and I'd still be sitting in the same place. We need to fix DHHS. It's structurally broken, and if we don't fix it, we're going to be doing this now until forever, and we'll never get prosperous.
Still, really dramatic accomplishments in this first session, only 1 year in. You've made really dramatic restructuring of the Maine State retirement system. Nobody's been able to do that since I've been here in 18 years. I mean, that must give you some satisfaction.
Yeah, there's some things that we did that made us, you know, that we think we've accomplished. I think the tax cuts were really, really desperately needed if we're going to move forward. The pension reform were desperately needed. Unfortunately, we have to fix the big one, and the big one is DHHS.
And how flexible can the administration be on that? I mean, we're looking, I think, at around $120 million before this fiscal year ends, not to mention what's coming up in the next year. I suspect there can be some horse trading going on between you and the legislature, but are you limited in that regard? Or?
Well, we're very limited on the amount of money that's available. I will say this. I will do everything in my power to make sure that assisted living, the folks in assisted living, are salvaged. But it's not going to be easy. And the legislature needs to give the governor's office a little bit more oversight and authority over Main State Housing and Efficiency Maine in order to get them part of the solution.
And I think what you'd like to see is to deal with a lot of these issues under the PNMIs, the private non-medical institutions, as a housing issue. I think that's how you phrase it. It's more of a housing issue than a medical issue.
Well, that's what the federal government is telling us. And if you really look at it, that's what it is. They are saying PNMIs, we will take care of all the medical needs of the people, but we're not going to do their housing or their room and board. And so if you separate out the room and board portion out of that bundle rate, and that's a different issue. And I agree with them.
Another issue, Representative Cushing, Andre Cushing, has proposed a number of workers' compensation changes in this session. Not something that I recall you talking a lot about, but have you seen any aspects of that legislation that look good to you?
I have spoken to Policy Nalfi about one item in workers' compensation, and it's the 90-day rule. It's just a non-workable rule. You know, an employee could say, well, I hurt myself 3 months ago. Well, what day? What was it? What were you doing? And now I'm not speaking as much as a governor as a businessman who has faced this in the marketplace, in the workplace, and that's just not a workable solution. So we have to be fair on both sides.
And also in the regard on a labor-related bill, you campaigned to some degree on fair share, your opposition to having state employees contribute part of their paychecks to these union organizations, Maine State Employees Association, et cetera. Do you think that you're going to make that bill a priority in your administration for this short session that we have?
I would like to. I would really like the state to really address it once and for all. Let's be fair and equitable here. I made an offer to the teachers union that for every dollar they put up for teacher, you know, self-development, the state would match it. They refused, but they're collecting dues from everybody in the state. Then they send that money to Washington for national political campaigns. Let's stop using dues money for national campaigns, and I'm fine. Then we will let fair share go. But until they do that, I want fair share.
Now, obviously, it's out today that, you know, you've recently restarted started a re-election campaign fundraising effort. Some people, I think, are automatically jumping to the conclusion that would imply that you have made a decision to seek a second term. Is that true, or is this really just a sort of a preparatory move on your part?
We're in the Capitol, and I'm not going to talk about the political side of things.
Okay. All right. So you also wouldn't be able to tell me how much was raised during that fundraising session?
Hell no. I don't know anything about that stuff.
So, you know, we finished up this first year, and you know, you have had, I think, some successes that you can really claim or big victories for Republicans. As recently as yesterday afternoon, I spoke with a House Speaker. He's made it clear that, you know, House Republicans are going to sort of perhaps take their own, chart their own course on things, not necessarily fall in lockstep with the chief executive.
And they should.
And I guess, how do you feel about that? And how do you think that your policies are going to affect re-election efforts for legislative Republicans in November, or is that really important to you?
It's very important to me that the issue with the assisted living people in Medicaid are salvaged. And if anybody does not work towards salvaging Medicaid for the assisted living folks, I hope they lose the next election. I don't care who they are. You can't put people on the street, number one. Number two, my agenda going forward is going to be energy. It's going to be pushing hard on energy to lower the cost, because I believe deep down in my heart that unless we get competitive with energy, Maine will never be competitive again in the business world. As a businessman, I think I've experienced the educational system by hiring folks out of school. I think we can do better. And I'm going to be pushing education real, real hard, particularly in the vocational side. I think there's a great future there. And then if we can get energy under control, if we get on the right direction for education, then the economy is going to be much easier to deal with, and we'll get more companies like Carbonite and ABC and these folks to come to Maine.
Well, thank you, Governor. I'd like to conclude our interview with just one question. How do you like the job? What do you like about it? What don't you like about it?
I really enjoy Saturday mornings when I meet with constituents. I think that's probably the most joyful part of the job. My wife and I enjoy having dinner with military families once a month. That's a lot of fun because you learn about a lot of great people and a lot of good work that goes on. The part that I'm not big in the political side of things, and I know it comes with the job, I look at it as a turnaround. I look at Maine, state of Maine, as a turnaround, like I've done in my private life in the business world. Maine's in a fiscal crisis. It needs to have a turnaround. That's what I like doing. And the politics side of it, I'm not particularly fond of.
And that's Governor Paul LePage talking with MPBN State House Bureau Chief A.J. Higgins earlier today at the State House. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, reaction from our guests and from you. The number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, Iran's Army Chief issues a warning to the U.S. Navy. New threats from Iran and their strategic implications.
Join us for the Diane Rehm Show this afternoon at 2 o'clock.
A new legislative session is underway, and lawmakers have some major items on their plates, from Maine Care to LURC to clean elections. This week on Maine Watch, we'll discuss these issues and more with leadership from both houses and both sides of the aisle. Our guests, Senate President Kevin Ray, House Speaker Bob Nutting, Senate Minority Leader Barry Hobbins, and House Minority Leader Emily Kane. We hope you'll join us for Maine Watch.
And you can join us for Maine Watch tonight at 8 on MPBN Television and tomorrow at 9 on MPBN Television, or tune in here on MPBN Radio tomorrow afternoon at 12:30.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today we're talking about politics in 2012. What's ahead? Our guests in our Portland studio, Ron Schmidt, professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine, and at the State House in Augusta, Mal Leary of Capital News Service, and MPBN's own State House Bureau Chief, A.J. Higgins. A.J., first to you. We just heard your interview with the governor from earlier today. Anything that struck you in particular that he said?
I thought, Keith, that it was particularly interesting to see that the governor has, I think, achieved a much more improved level of comfort in dealing with the media in general. This week he's had several interviews with different representatives of area media, and I thought our interview was fairly freewheeling, easygoing, and he was fairly direct in a lot of his statements. We didn't get too far in terms of what he wanted to do after this term is over. We know that he is organizing fundraising efforts. He didn't want to discuss that too much, but one of the things we've always seen from this governor is that he tends to be somewhat contradictory on issues related to politics, claims to eschew the political aspects of his job, yet at the same time, at his core, he seems to be the consummate politician, enjoying most these Saturday morning meetings with constituents that walk into his office from right off the street.
Mal Leary, the governor is facing a major battle here with this budget. He's proposing more than $200 million in cuts to Medicaid. Democrats are questioning his numbers up front and his solution to this, but so are some Republicans, right?
Well, a lot of Republicans. It's not just the Democrats who are questioning the $221 million estimate. It's so bad that the caucuses, the Republican caucuses on both the Health and Human Services Committee and the Appropriations Committee said this proposal as stands just is not going to pass. We've got to make changes. So that's going to be the major issue dominating these first few weeks of the session is how do you come up with a budget solution to the cost overruns that are occurring in the Department of Health and Human Services? The problem is, Keith, we're going to be facing more budgets after this. There's going to be a budget that's going to take care of the $25 million from the Budget Streamlining Task Force. There's going to be another one that I call the usual supplemental budget that is needed to do things like pay the oil bill here at the State House, which will run out before the winter season does. And then there may be a fourth budget, depending on what Congress does, in terms of making cuts to reach some sort of agreement on reducing the federal budget deficit. Any cuts that way are going to roll downhill to the state, and we're going to have yet another budget to deal with.
So Mal, how is this playing out, though, where we have sort of, you know, three political forces at play in Augusta? You have the Republicans and the Democrats, and then the governor's office. Usually the governor is in line with his own party, but how does it, with having these three separate entities going, how does that affect his ability to move his agenda forward?
I think Ron will understand when I say there's really five groups we're talking about here. We have the governor, then we have the House Democrats and the Senate Democrats, the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans. And believe me, the parties don't always agree. So you really have a problem here where you may come up with a solution that flies in three of the four caucuses, but if it doesn't fly in the fourth, you go back to the drawing table and come up with some sort of solution that goes by all four caucuses. And then, of course, as you point out, there's the governor.
And I think it's interesting to note, Keith, also that the governor has shown some willingness to deal with these private non-medical institutions, the PNMIs. I think we will see some trading going back and forth on those particular issues. Other aspects of the budget that involve some individuals that are referred to as non-categoricals. These are childless adults, also some 19 and 20-year-olds, some married individuals who make a little too much income to qualify for these programs. I think that there's going to be consensus on perhaps taking steps to eliminate them from these programs. There seems to be a lot of gelling around that issue, although Democrats at this point, Mal and I met with leadership yesterday, do not seem to be particularly ready to discuss what proposals they would support and which ones they would not. They're claiming that that they're still, I guess, skeptical of the figures and the math that have been provided by the administration.
What's important to note?
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry, Keith, I'm stepping on you. One important thing to note here is that the staff of the Appropriations Committee and the staff of DHHS have yet to agree on what the numbers are. Until that happens, the committee can do very little to move forward and try to strike some sort of compromise.
All right, let's keep it at the State House for the moment. 1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Mal and AJ, a couple of other issues that are likely to take center stage this session. There are some labor initiatives, as we heard in the interview. How big an issue is that going to be in this second part of the session?
Well, we heard the governor basically state earlier in the program that he is interested in taking a look at this fair share provision that requires non-unionized state employees to contribute a portion of their wages for union dues. The governor thinks that it's just categorically wrong, flies in the face of most of the business principles that he believes in. And also on the other side, the Democrats and union representatives are taking a fairly hard stand on this issue. They claim that it costs them just as much to represent those who are not in the union as those who do, and that they should receive this amount of money to really offset those costs. And then again, there are others in the who are unionized workers in the private sector who are claiming that this is just the first step, that the governor is really trying to direct the fair share provision towards the private sector as well as state employees.
And we should say, in the interest of full disclosure, we should say that the main teachers union does represent some members of MPBN, since we're talking about that. The governor also has mentioned welfare and came under fire recently for making the statement that there were more Mainers receiving some form of welfare benefits than were actually paying into the system. Is this likely to become a partisan battle as well?
When we see a specific proposal to change the existing welfare laws, I think then you'll see a battle. But right now, we have nothing from the governor except his comments that he doesn't like what's going on. He hasn't put forward any legislation. And, of course, that's what this place deals with.
Sure. And, Keith, the governor is putting forth a fairly strong argument on that particular point. We have approximately 360,000 Mainers on Medicaid here in the state, and they represent approximately 30% of the population, and that compares with the national average of around 20%. And the governor is absolutely insistent that we need to get that number down. It's it doesn't reflect the fact that, you know, there are other factors that are going on in those numbers. Maine has a higher number of older residents. Obviously, our wages are not perhaps where they should be with respect to the other averages in New England. But I think that's going to be a real front burner issue in this short session.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. USM political science professor Ron Schmidt. Want to get you into the conversation here. Talk a little bit, if you would, about Paula Page's kind of birth with support from the Tea Party. Are those Tea Party members enjoying any of the influence as a reward for helping get him elected to governor?
Well, of course, the Tea Party is more of a movement with a number of different organizations rather than something like a singular political party. So there are supporters of the governor who definitely, I believe, have his ear, the Maine Heritage Policy Center, for one, who share some of the governing ideas and the political philosophy of some parts of the Tea Party. I don't know whether the National Tea Party feels particularly represented, but I think that the governor's rise to power in 2010, the year that was big for the Tea Party, and his larger opposition to aspects of governing and to politics certainly resonate with their message.
What was your reaction to his interview that we played earlier? Is there a sense that he is interested in getting Republicans reelected to the legislature, or is he really more concerned with solidifying his conservative base and passing his agenda?
I had two thoughts on that interview. The first was, I think he really wanted to talk about DHHS, and he didn't want to really get off message. So I think when it came time to talk about reelecting Republicans in the legislature, he wanted to stick with his first topic. But secondly, I was struck when he said that he was, quote, not big on the political side of things. And I think there's an assumption there, shared also by members of the Tea Party, that politics is somehow extraneous to governing. And I disagree. I think especially for a governor who came in with a minority share of the overall vote, politics is actually a very important part of governing, both in terms of reaching out to Mainers in general, of both political parties or of neither, to try to build towards a governing coalition, and also to play a role in helping the Maine GOP to develop. I hear a lot of questions from political scientists around the country these days about whether the Maine GOP is going to turn away from its heritage as the Margaret Chase Smith or Olympia Snowe party and towards something that looks more national, that looks more conservative. And I think this is an opportunity for Governor LePage to try to put his stamp on a real Republican coalition in the state. So I think that politics is actually very important to this moment. And I believe he pays more attention to it than he was suggesting, but it does seem like that would be a missed opportunity.
And he would have to pay attention to it, wouldn't he? Because if he loses control, leadership in the legislature, it's going to make it that much more difficult to get some of his more controversial agenda pieces moved forward, right?
No, you're exactly right. I actually, at the beginning of his administration, I sometimes wondered if perhaps he wasn't really interested in the long haul. If, you know, he had a number of policies he thought were important for Maine, he wanted to get those passed, and that was his goal. But he's filed for re-election, and he's had the fundraiser. So I think he's in it for the long haul, and I think he's going to have to pay more attention to his own party at least.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones now. Mariah is calling from Bath. Hi, Mariah. Go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. I would have asked the governor and now ask the speakers, some of whom I know today, as an old teacher and politician, do you all know the root meaning of the word politician?
Well, what? How about if you could educate us, Mariah? That would be great.
Who's speaking?
This is Keith.
Hi, Keith.
Hi, Mariah.
Well, it's troubled me for a long time that Democrats and Republicans, independents and whoever, have seemed to separate us so much from the word politician. It's a nasty word now. It's not. Politician means a people working, for the people. Paul means people. And we made that word into something dirty. And I'm really angry about it all the time. You're a politician, boo-hoo, you know. I was a politician, too. And I worked very hard for the people of Maine in my district. And I wish you would stop using that word in a nasty way.
Okay.
I think that's an excellent point, and very correct. I think that we have people's ideological problems with government have caused us to look askance at the idea of public service, and I think that's a real loss.
Former Representative Holt ably represented her district in Bath. I can assure you of that.
Mal, you recognized her voice, I guess.
Oh, yes.
Are you still with us, Mariah?
I don't forget you. Yeah, I'm still with you.
Okay. Well, listen, thank you for your call. I appreciate it.
Okay, bye-bye.
You're listening to Maine Calling. The number to join the conversation, 1-800-399-3566. Ron Schmidt, we're hearing a lot of and getting feedback from listeners and viewers. There's a lot of frustration, as we've seen with the Occupy movement, but also at the other ends of the political spectrum. It seems there's an immense amount of just general frustration with the workings of government at the national level. Are we seeing it, too, at the state level, do you think?
I do think so. The Maine legislature, I think, has a little bit more of a record of getting things done than Congress has recently. And the Maine Constitution is a little less set up to slow progress. As I often tell students, only 6% of bills ever introduced into the Congress actually make it into law. And that is sort of part of the overall plan. I think the Maine politics has a little bit more of a philosophy of getting things done, a somewhat more practical approach to what we might see in Washington. But there's so much frustration with genuine gridlock that I think we can expect to see it wherever we see politics.
AJ, as you both have been pointing out from the State House, it's a little too soon to tell what pieces of legislation are coming from the governor. But what's your sense that in the end all the sides will be able to sort of come together and solve these problems, or is it going to be a really heated session?
I don't know. You know, we met yesterday, as I said, with leaders from both sides. And on the one hand, there seems to be a desire to reach consensus on a lot of these really divisive issues. But at the same time, I know that in talking to a lot of staff around here, they're really looking forward to the division on these issues because they say that it will allow both parties to distinguish themselves for the voters, to really show them what they stand for, and to give voters a clear choice when this legislature comes up for re-election in November. And it's going to be a pivotal, critical election to determine whether or not the Republican majority that we have here today is just perhaps a fluke, if you will, or if it's really signals a real change in thinking here in Maine. Wouldn't you agree, Mel?
Well, I think the bottom line is there has to be a balanced budget right now because the costs of the Medicaid program are exceeding appropriations. They're going to have to pass a budget to fix this mess. So to answer your question, will there be a budget a deal? Yes, there will be. But please don't ask me what's going to be in it.
Okay. All right, Mal. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we would like to hear more from you as well. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Stay with us.
I'm Marco Werman. Next time on The Changing World, Out in the World.
Gay people are the canaries in the mine. we can judge a society's commitment to equality, liberty, and human rights by the way it treats its gay people.
Same-sex relationships from ancient Egypt to the modern world. Next time on The Changing World from the BBC and PRI.
Tune in about 15 minutes at 1 o'clock.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the next On Point, the American Southwest is overbuilt and out of water. We'll look at how and whether the Southwest, as we've built it, can survive. That's coming up on the next On Point from NPR.
You can tune in for On Point this evening at midnight.
This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. We're talking about the year in politics in 2012 and what's ahead. My guest, Ron Schmidt, professor of political science at the University of Southern Maine and at the State House in Augusta, Mal Leary of the Capitol News Service, and MPBN's own State House Bureau Chief, A.J. Higgins, excuse me. We're going to go to the phones now, and let's check in with Steve, who's calling from Orono. Hi, Steve.
Hi, good day. You know, one of the things I think we're just giving up on is what kind of jobs we want, which the jobs that left us created the situation. Medicaid and Medicare, in my opinion, used to be a safety net. Now it's just something to keep people from losing everything or dying or, you know, what we've allowed is we've created a welfare system for profits for certain large corporations to make people work part-time. No benefits, no living wage, and then the cost shift comes to us. And at some point, if the L.L. Beans and the Chin Bros and the National Semiconductors can create a business model that includes well-paying jobs with benefits, why don't we require some of the wealthiest, biggest corporations from receiving corporate welfare? In other words, they don't have to pay a living wage, and they don't have to pay health care benefits, and that goes into their profits, where you have a large big box company where six of the family members have an income of greater what than 30% of the working folks in the United States. There's something inherently wrong with trying to replace jobs that don't pay anything with jobs that used to pay a living wage, had pensions, not 401ks, and did the responsible thing of a responsible corporation like we have here in the state of Maine. You know, that's why the Occupy movement will probably be a huge player in this presidential election, in my opinion.
Okay, Steve, thanks for the call. Ron Schmidt?
I think that's an excellent point, but both in terms of the very real shift in our economy and the result that that's had in a lot of other ways, but also in the way that the caller is helping us to think here about the big picture. You know, these things are related in ways that we might not see. The governor's plan regarding the PMNIs remind me of in the 1960s when Ronald Reagan was governor of California. He shut down a number of state mental hospitals and nursing homes as a way to deal with a budget shortfall crisis. And the result was something of a public health crisis instead, you know, a big increase in the number of the homeless population, especially in regard to the elderly and the mentally unstable. So I think we need to take a big picture view of what really would resolve our economic problem. The governor does talk about jobs. I think the caller does remind us of the ways in which particular kinds of jobs lead to particular kinds of expectations by citizens.
We're going to shift. Keith, I would point out on the same juncture that the governor earlier today did point out that he wants to make energy a major component of this short session. He is having, regular discussions with energy interests in Canada, in Quebec and New Brunswick, and he's stated on several occasions that it's his desire to try and bring energy costs down in this state to give employers more ability to pay a higher wage, and that's, I think, his version of really improving the economic situation here in the state.
Okay, AJ, thanks. Let's shift gears a little bit and turn our sights on this coming election year. The biggest item here is Olympia Snowe running for re-election to the Senate, and Ron Schmidt, some conservative Republicans see her as vulnerable, or at least they're unhappy with her, we'll put it that way. And in fact, she faces a primary race with two Tea Party backed conservatives in that race, which is somewhat unusual. Is she truly vulnerable?
I don't think so. At the strategic level, her opponents for the primary are probably going to be splitting the conservative or Tea Party faction of the Republican Party. And she also has a sizable war chest, and her polling numbers are still very strong. She's very popular regardless of party in Maine. So as a practical matter, I don't think she's in trouble. I think that the challenge is interesting, however. As I said earlier, I think there are reasonable questions to ask right now about the future direction of the Republican Party, and this campaign might be a way for the party to begin airing out some of those central ideas.
As you mentioned, the two challengers here in the Republican primary, Scott DeAmbois and Andrew Ian Dodge, both identify with the Tea Party, but are really scrambling to each get their share of support. So may essentially cancel each other out.
Right. The Tea Party in Maine has proven to be well-organized, generally speaking, and they played an important role, for example, in the fight over the Republican platform in 2010, and I'm sure in the support for the governor in his success. But they are a minority faction within the GOP as a whole, and if you split that faction even more, especially against a candidate as popular as Senator Snow, I don't think it's going to have an effect on her reelection.
Mal Leary, assuming she survives the primary, does she have a serious challenge from the Democratic contenders in the fall?
I think they're going to try to make it a serious challenge. But I think what they're hoping for is what Ron alluded to, and that is the, I call it the Chris Coons effect. He's the Democratic senator from Delaware, and he was the Secretary of State, and he was the sacrificial lamb candidate because Michael Castle, a very popular representative and former governor of Delaware, was given the absolute nomination. No one thought he was going to get knocked off. Well, Christine O'Donnell knocked him off. She's the one who spent most of her time in her TV ads explaining that she wasn't a witch. Uh-huh. That led to Mr. Coons getting elected in a seat that a year before the election, everybody said was going to Mike Castle. He was the equivalent of an incumbent Republican. So I think the Democrats are hoping for that sort of upset with Mr. DeAmbois or Mr. Dodge getting the Republican nomination.
And the two Democrats are John Hink of Portland, the state rep, and Matt Dunlap. Is that the field so far?
And we might have Senator Dill from Cape Elizabeth may join the crowd.
And okay. Obviously, of those three, I think that probably at this moment anyway, Matt Dunlap would probably be the most recognizable figure to Democrats out there. He's worked with Democrats in the past as a member of the House and obviously the Democratic Secretary of State for a number of years.
1-800-399-3566 to join the conversation. Or email us at talk@mpbn.net. There are two congressional seats also up. Incumbent Democrat Shelley Pingree has no primary challenger, but there could be a Republican primary between Patrick Calder and possibly Senate Majority Leader John Courtney. Mal, is that what?
Well, that's the rumor. I think they're trying to find someone who has the financial resources to combat the husband of Shelley Pingree, Donald Sussman, which, of course, would very deep pockets indeed. So I'm looking more fun in the 2nd District, where the Senate president is running again for that seat. He ran for the first time against Mike Mishu when Mike first ran for Congress, and it was a close race, 52-48, and Kevin's making a second run on that race, and I think that's going to be the far more interesting of the two congressional races.
Kevin Ray making that announcement today, by the way, that he's officially in the race.
And political climate has changed quite a bit since that time, right, Mal? I mean, perhaps the conditions may favor the Republican challenger in this case?
Well, I think that's what Kevin Ray's hoping. But, of course, you have a pretty conservative Democrat in Mike Mishu, and that's one of the reasons why he's done so well in the more conservative of the two districts, which is the 2nd District.
Ron Schmidt, what's your take on that 2nd District race? Is Mike Mishu, does he have a, a challenge there?
He's got a challenge. He's less solidly established, I think, than Senator Snow. I think he's well liked in his district. He is a more conservative Democrat. He's got roots in the district. I think if that originally planned Republican redistricting had gone through, and he'd wound up in the same district as Pingree, things would have been a little bit more dramatic. As it stands now, I think that he's in good shape. But you know, it's a cliche in political science that even though members of Congress have a really high reelection rate, they always run scared. They always run as though their political careers were in danger. And I'm sure Representative Michaud is going to run a well-run campaign.
All right, let's get to the phones again, and we have callers who want to talk about the issues before the legislature. Big surprise there. Let's go to Tom in Stetson. Hi, Tom.
Yes, good day. Wanted to address the fair share issue. The governor said that the people that aren't union members are paying dues. Well, they don't pay dues. They pay a fee for the representation. This has been followed all the way up to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court looked at the figures, the money, and everything else, and has ruled that, you know, no, this all of the money goes towards supporting the costs of representing the employees in state. Also, what he doesn't mention is his intent is to actually provide welfare for the people that won't be paying the dues, because under federal law, the union will still have to represent them and can even be sued by these members if the members don't think that they've received the services. So he's creating a welfare class. They're creating this whole thing, and the figures and the facts aren't there to support it in any way. And I'd like to have some discussion over that.
Yeah, Ron Schmidt.
This is a strategy, if that's what it is, that was also used by Ronald Reagan's budget director, David Stockman, back in the 80s, to make the role of governmental agencies and unions more and more difficult to achieve as a way to further destabilize them. And then you can run on the fact that they can't get the job done.
Mal or AJ, is this really going to become a partisan issue with the union lining up with the Democrats and the Republicans on the other side, or is it a little more nuanced than that?
No, I think that it will. It's going to be, I think, pretty cut and dry for most members of the party, and this is going to be one of those situations where you won't see too much division between the governor's office and majority Republicans. The governor's already basically said earlier in our program that he does support the repeal of this provision. And in terms of problems, I would say if there was one senator, state senator, it might be Senator Roger Cates, who represents, he's from Augusta, and he represents so many state workers here in the legislature that it may be problematic for him to get on board with that. But yes, I do think that it's going to be one of those big blowout issues that we can probably look forward to in the closing days of the session. That's when they usually happen, right, Mal?
And late at night with long debates.
Right. Good luck with that, Mal and AJ. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you all for joining us. Mal Leary of the Capitol News Service in Augusta, our own AJ Higgins, MPBN's State House Bureau Chief, and Ron Schmidt of the University of Southern Maine.
Thank you for having me.
And thanks to you, our listeners, for taking part in this program. Our producer is Jonathan Smith. John Keimel ran the board. Cindy Hahn was our call screener. Technical assistance from John Bradford, Dave Bartlett, and production help from Nick Woodward, Chad Diamond, Steve Galvin, and Brandon Atkinson. I'm Keith Shortall. Thanks to all of you for taking part in Maine Calling.